Okay. All right. So all right. Let's go.
Let's go.
Jesus Christ.
Let's get started.
Okay. Thank you. Well, let's get right into it because we do have a lot to talk about. So let's get into this. You guys ready? You guys ready to talk news, Tom, Jen?
I'm excited. Sure. Go.
Okay. Welcome to Talk Iran Riyadh, the Wheel of Time showcast. I am your host, Joe Perry, here with my co-host, Jen Isgro. How are you doing tonight, Jen?
I'm much better than I was 5 minutes ago, Joe. I'm ready to go.
I'm much better than I was 15 minutes ago, Jen. Oh, and let's wait, before I introduce our next co-host, it's an early happy birthday to you, Jen.
Yes.
Oh,
happy
thank
birthday.
You.
Yes, tomorrow is Jen's birthday, or when this comes out, 2 days ago is Jen's birthday. And I would be remiss without introducing my other co-host, Tom Kokoza. How are you doing tonight, Tom?
I'm ready to be heard, Joe. That's how I feel.
Good.
Ready to be heard.
Well, we can hear you loud and clear, and I'm glad we figured out those technical difficulties because Jen and I were talking about doing the show without you.
thanks. I appreciate that.
We have a lot to talk about tonight. There's a lot of news. There's a lot to talk about with our topic. So let's get right into it. We'll start off with the news as usual. So the first piece of news I have here is probably the most exciting one, so why not start with it? So WattSeries.com posted an article. You might remember that back in November of last year, they had posted an article about filming going on in Plaskovice. There was a lot of chateaus and castles, and it was very fancy there.
Yes, chateaus.
Yeah. So they have a follow-up to that. So according to them, WattSeries has uncovered documents confirming that filming took place at the castle / chateau in the municipality of Plaskovice. The production was granted temporary use of the entrance hall of the main building and the Chateau Park complex. So I'm sure you've seen the pictures. If you haven't, go check out WattSeries.com. You should be checking them out religiously. Or if you're on a Discord server, we get a feed of their website. So what do you guys think? What do you think this is, Jen?
So let me just add a little to the story so we can speculate. Okay. Sarah Nakamura responded to the tweet or one of the tweets. Somebody had asked a question, you know, where do you guys, I can't speak. What location in the story is this taking place at? So she said, at first she said, if you only knew, ... And then she replied to that with three emojis, a bed, a ghost, and a shocked emoji. So I've been trying to rack my brain to think about someone having a dream about a ghost, maybe, or a dead person. I'm not quite sure that I can come up with anything that's good. On that one?
A ghost, like a bed, and a surprised face. Yeah. Tom, what do you think about this?
So let's say before that, I thought this was Camelin. I thought this was the interior of the palace in Camelin. That's what I thought it was. With that, I now think that those symbols are somehow mean Ishmael in dreams, right? And I think that this is going to be like, the interiors of this are going to be like his like dream palace, you know, where like the boys eventually go and they open the door and it's the weird fireplace with all the screaming skulls and whatnot. I think that might be it. So like the bed is people sleeping and the ghosty face is supposed to be
Ishmael.
Yeah.
Baal Zemon.
Yes. So that's my guess now. That wasn't my guess before. I don't think it doesn't look exterior or the interiors that we've seen anything like what I pictured that to look like. I pictured that looking much more stone and dark and forbidding, not very classy. But that's what those emojis make me think of.
That's then good. I had another idea.
There's no way this is it. But I thought it was Tom finding Dina dead in the bed and being surprised about it. But that doesn't make sense.
That's really far.
That took place in an inn, and it's probably not that, but that's what I thought about.
Yeah, so November would place it somewhere in the episode 3 and 4 block, I think. Because I think I had asked them about that, and they replied that puts it probably at the beginning of that block too, which was episodes 3 and 4. Yeah, I agree. I think when we first talked about this back in November, we thought it might have been Camelin. You know, castles and whatnot. It wasn't what I pictured Camelin to look like, but again, they have to make do with what they have. Then, Jen, when you pointed out those emojis, I thought, you know, could it be the prologue? Is that Luz Theron? And I don't know what the bed has to do with it, though. But Tom, I think you've got me sold now. It could be a dream sequence. I like it. I hope it is. I want dream sequences, so.
I don't know. The ghost is throwing me off because I don't consider him to be a ghost necessarily, but I don't know.
I don't think there's an Ishmael emoji. Is there a Balzamon emoji?
I think maybe like the ghost fire and then faces. Eyes. Like, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yes, yeah, so that's what I would do. I'd do fire and big eyes.
that's a good point. I would do two flames as like the eyes of Balzamon.
Closed eyes, open eyes, fire.
No, we're not going back to that. Okay, so moving on, since we have a lot to talk about. So the next three pieces of information are courtesy of Geeky Eri and her tireless sniffing around. And she's actually here in the Discord with us. So thanks, Geeky Eri, for finding these for us. We have to have you on the show one time if you're willing to come on. So we've got two season two writers identified. The first one is Rohit Kumar, and she found these on LinkedIn, both of these. So these are on their LinkedIn profiles. He explicitly has writer for Amazon Studios Wheel of Time season two, November 2019 to present. And if you guys remember when Rafe put that, I think it was a tweet or an Instagram post out with season two writers room kind of picture, that was about November. So that makes sense.
Oh my God, that was November.
Yeah, that it's a long time ago. It seems like it was just the other day though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so his credits include, he did a lot of story editing on 13 Reasons Why, and he did write one of the episodes. And he's also credited with The Walking Dead World Beyond. So that's what credits we have for him. So what do you guys think about Rohit Kumar, season two writer?
Didn't see either of those shows, but The Walking Dead I know is very, very popular. I think 13 Reasons Why was pretty popular as well. So
season four just came out.
Of 13 Reasons Why?
Season four?
Yep. Season four just came out. I just saw the trailer.
Oh my God. Well, yeah.
It's the last season. They're only doing
52 reasons.
Yeah. Too many reasons. No, but I mean, those are definitely shows I've heard of. So that's good. I'm sure he's knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Some people were a little skeptical. They were like, well, that's not fantasy stuff. But
yeah, but so what? Maybe this is his big break into fantasy.
Yeah. I've never seen The World Beyond Walking Dead, but I mean, 13 Reasons Why is very character driven. So if you can write characters, I think that's more important than writing fantasy because the fantasy is already there.
Right. And like, I don't want people who worked on, you know, Hercules Legendary Journeys working on this show. Right.
That was a good show, Tom.
I love that show, but I didn't love that show for the writing. also dating myself. But anyway, that's like 30 years ago. Yeah. I want somebody who's a good writer who can write characters and can write, you know, dramatic character arcs. And then, like you said, the plot's there. You don't have to create the plot, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You just have to adapt it and make it. And he did, like I said, mostly for 13 Reasons Why, he did mostly story editing. So that kind of, I guess that's kind of, if you already have source material, then story editing, that skill probably comes in handy when you're doing an adaptation. So just my two cents. Although I really don't know what a story editor does, so I'm just making that up. So we have our second season two writer, Rami Park. So she doesn't really have much history. I couldn't really pull up too many credits of her, like nothing that we would know. But she was listed as a staff writer. So I don't know if she's writing a specific episode, because I know TV shows, they'll have like their main writers who write the episodes, but they also have staff writers, I guess, who assist. So I don't know if she's going to be associated with like a specific episode or not, or she's just helping out with the writing. Yeah. And again, November. And hers, it didn't explicitly say Wheel of Time. It says Amazon Studios, November 2019 to present. And then it says Prague, Czech Republic. So I think we can assume.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So we haven't seen any of the previous writers, though, returning, which is interesting.
Well, I think some of the previous writers are officially not returning.
Oh, yes. We did hear something about that, right? The Clarkson twins?
Yeah, they've got their own show. I'm not sure exactly what, but, you know, they're going to be running their own thing now, which I think that if the writers of the first season have done a good enough job to get their own stuff before the first season has aired, that's another sign in this show's credit, right? So I'm pretty excited about that. But to your point earlier about the staff writer versus, I guess, like a featured writer, I think the very fact that she doesn't have a scriptography that is of note to us is the reason why she's just listed as staff writer and not somebody like, hey, we got, you know, this person to write on our show. Like they give them like a featured thing. They're on the staff. She may write an episode or two. She may write parts of an episode, however it works. But like, I think you kind of get that extra credit the more the more rooms you've been a part of, the more episodes you've produced of shows. That
people- yeah. And Gikiari's saying in chat that Celine Song was also not returning for season two.
Yeah.
So those are two or three technically writers that aren't returning. But so we've got some new writers for season two announced. So that's good. We know that they already started writing season two. I have no idea how far they're into it, but that's good news.
They've had plenty of time to work on it.
Exactly. That's right. They do have plenty of time to work on it. And I think Rafe said that in like his when he did the his interview on JordanCon line, he mentioned about how they can like kind of focus a little more on season two writing because they have the time now. So that's good.
All the time in the world.
That's right. And then our last piece of news, which was kind of actually one of the most exciting pieces of news to me, at least, was that this was also found by Gikiari. Thank you. We have a concept artist, Sergio Sandoval. So apparently he did some work for the show back in January and February of last year. So for most of you, or almost all of you, unless you follow the show religiously, you know, you don't know who Sergio Sandoval is, so I'm going to tell you who he is. So he's worked a lot with Guillermo del Toro. He worked on The Devil's Backbone, the Hellboy movies, and Pan's Labyrinth. He's credited with designing the character Fawn in Pan's Labyrinth. So if you haven't seen Pan's Labyrinth or you haven't seen that character, it's fucking awesome.
Let's say this. If you haven't seen Pan's Labyrinth, but you've seen anything from Pan's Labyrinth, it is that character.
Yeah, if you've seen the commercial, yeah.
Right.
And he's also worked with DC Comics, too.
Yeah, so I'm very excited about this. This is like, if you were to, like, before the show was being done or anything like that at all, if you were to go, like, oh, give me, like, who you wish was working on the show. And I was like, oh, like, the people who do the creatures for Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah.
I wish they worked on the show, and yes. They are. Like,
yes.
You can't get any better than that. I mean, people look at the Hellboy movies, I think, as, you know, lesser art than, you know, maybe Pan's Labyrinth or The Shape of Water or some of his more critically acclaimed films.
That's not because of the costuming or the creatures, though. That's
the creature design in those movies is absolutely nuts. Absolutely nuts. So I'm very excited.
Yeah. Do you think he's involved with Shadowspawn?
No, he's probably involved with Rand. Yes, of course he's involved with Shadowspawn.
I'm like so excited. Like when I saw this and I was thinking, I immediately thought Shadowspawn, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't wait to see if this guy's working on like Trollocs.
Or like a Murdrawl in Murdrawl. Like Pan's Labyrinth. Oh my God. Like a Pan's Labyrinth style.
Yeah.
It'd be terrifying. Like the guy from Pan's Labyrinth that has no eyes.
That's, yeah.
There's literally a guy with no eyes, and he puts his eyes in his hands or whatever. Like, that's the scariest thing I've ever seen. Yeah.
Maybe that's why they brought him in, because his specialty is eyeless creatures.
There you go.
Yeah. No, I'm very excited about this. That's cool, you know?
He only worked for 2 months, so I guess that would make sense, because he's probably just drawing up designing concepts for the creatures.
He's not the makeup artist that's actually doing them so much as the person who's helping design how these things should look.
Yeah, he's like drawing them up and giving them to the makeup group or whatever and saying, here, this is what you got to make. And then they have to figure out how to do it.
For those of you who have really friends cool. that show Face Off, it's very clear which part of the process he is in, right?
Yeah.
Back at the beginning. Anyway. I love it. All right.
All right. Anyway, back to the. So that's our news for today.
That's a lot of news.
So we had some nice pieces. There was a lot of news. And we, again, I'm going to thank Gikiari again for finding most of this news for us. So thank you so much. But let's get into the meat of our episode. So we've got a lot to talk about. We're going to be delving into another character. And then also additionally, we figured, so we're going to go into Liandrin, and I'm going to try to pronounce her last name, which doesn't appear once in the books. It only appears in the companion. So you don't know that she had a last name, or you didn't know her last name until you saw the companion. It's Guiral. I don't know. Sorry.
Guirali. We should have did this one last week.
Yeah, we should have done. Yeah. Well, none of us really know how it's pronounced, so I don't think there's a pronunciation guide. Yeah. And for those of you who are wondering, the book has it pronounced Liandrin. All right? Liandrin.
Not Liandrin.
I'm just going to say
Liandrin. Liandrin is she's from Long Island. Liandrin.
Yeah.
That name is actually probably going to be like a name that people name their kids. After Liandrin. The show comes out.
You can't, though. I mean, it's got such bad connotations. But anyway, we're going to delve into Liandrin, and then we're also going to talk about the Black Aja as well, because we figured, why the hell not? It's a great time to get into the Black Aja.
Yes.
So, Jen, do you want to take us in with Liandrin's first appearance in the Wheel of Time?
I shall.
I believe it's in the beginning of The Great Hunt.
The Great Hunt, chapter 4, Summoned, the book.
That's good.
Okay. So two people come to Moraine's door, and she says she recognized them both. Dark-haired Anaya in her blue-fringed shawl, and fair-haired Leandrin in her red. Leandrin, not only young-seeming, but young and pretty, with a doll's face and a small, petulant mouth, had her hand raised to pound again. Her dark brows and darker eyes were a sharp contrast to the multitude of pale, honey braids brushing her shoulders, but the combination was not uncommon in Tarabon. Both women were taller than Moraine, though Leandrin by less than a hand. There's many other descriptions of her, I feel like, throughout the book of how, of her features and all that, but.
Yeah, they do go in a lot about her features. I think every time she appears, they have to mention her doll-like features and her rosebud mouth.
She like twists her mouth up or something.
Her honey-colored braids.
Beaded braids. That's right. They do mention that every time Leandrin appears, they mention that. He mentions that, so. I do have a height, official height for her from the companion. She's 5'5",
okay.
For anyone who's wondering. Yeah, she had dark brown eyes. And Robert Jordan also describes her as having, well, I guess it's from his notes, as a lush body, which I don't remember that in the books.
A lush body.
Maybe, right? maybe he liked her, and that's why he just kept describing how her face and how perfect she was.
I always imagine Leandrin as having like that, you know, resting bitch face.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, but she's very beautiful. But
yeah, because she's beautiful, but she's
face.
Just like not, nobody, everyone could just tell that she's like nasty, but she's very pretty, but it doesn't matter because of the way she, resting bitch face.
Yeah. So just a little background on her. So she was born in 964, which makes her 34 at the beginning of the series. So she's young. She's young Aes Sedai for sure. She was born in Tarabon to a poor family. From an early age, she worked at learning to speak and act like the more well-to-do Taraboners, because I guess she didn't like being poor. And sometime before going to the White Tower, she becomes a dark friend. So she's a dark friend before she goes to the White Tower. And when she, and it seems like it was hard to tell from the wording, but I was trying to puzzle this out. But it seems like she was a dark friend before she even learned, knew that she could channel.
She's evil because, from the start, basically, from childhood.
Yeah. So, yeah. So she's a dark friend before she even knows she can channel, before she goes to the White Tower. And once she learns she can channel, she like instantly is seeking out the Black Aja. She goes to the White Tower at the age of 15. And I'm going to mention this because we talked about this previously, especially with Liana. She spent 5 years as a novice and 5 years as an acceptant. So that's a little more than, I think that's the same amount of time as a novice as Liana, but 1 year less. Liana spent 1 year less as an accepted. Again, not as quickly as I think Moraine and Swan, who were like 3 years and 3 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, but that's still pretty quick. 5 years as a novice, 5 years as an accepted. And she chooses the Red Aja when she's raised to Aes Sedai, even though she's basically black.
Right.
From when she goes to the tower, she's Black Aja. But she picks the Red Aja. So
do you think she picks red because it's like a very short leap to black? Like, at least if I pick red, I can be outwardly bitchy towards men at least. And like, people won't, you know, think anything of it because I'm a Red Aja.
I don't know. I don't know if she picks it because she thinks like she associates red. I'm actually going to, when we get into the Black Aja, I'm actually going to tell you the percentages from each Aja that are actually black. And red is the highest, but not by much. I don't know if she just hates men. I don't know. I don't really know. It's a good question. I'm not sure why women pick the Red Aja. I'm sure some of them don't like men. Some of them are
I'm saying like if she knew she was going to be black. Do people know that like red is like Slytherin?
Yeah.
You're going to be evil anyway, so you might as well just pick like the most evil of the good Ajas. I don't know.
I guess.
It's weird because like you really only meet like two Red Aja members, maybe three, depending on your point of view, who are like in any way sympathetic. But you can't just figure that everyone who's a red is like a total B.
Right. But that's like Slytherin too. It's like, but everyone who's evil is...
Not everyone who's in Slytherin is evil, but everyone in Slytherin is a jerk. Like,
that's true.
Like that's their guidepost. Be a jerk to other people to put yourself.
To be honest, though, if you think about it, though, I mean, I guess besides maybe the yellow Aja, I guess the yellow and the green. I say the yellow, the green, and the red have the most clear cut purpose, right? Like Red Aja, this is what you do. You hunt male channelers, and that's basically it.
Right.
It's very like limited to what you do, like as yellow is healing and you know, green is the battle Aja. Those are very limited, whereas the other Ajas are a little bit more broad, I think, in well, what you can do.
Gray is pretty, you're mediators and you're out there. Like, I feel like gray is the same kind of a thing. I feel like she couldn't heal. Like she's bad at healing. And like, if you don't have an academic bent, you're not going to go to the brown or the white. So I feel like blue and red are like, well, I don't know what else to do, so I'll go to one of these two.
Yeah. You know, it's true. Well, blue is actually the second highest.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah. Blue has the second highest of the Black Sisters. So anyway, back into Liandrin. So technically she's a wilder since she had learned a weak form of compulsion before going into the White Tower. We learned this throughout the book. She uses compulsion when we first meet her. So yes, this is a spoilers podcast, but Liandrin is Black Aja, but you know, you learn that like right away. It's not like something that's kept carried on through the entire of this series. When you meet Liandrin, you know there's something bad about her, and you quickly learn that she's Black Aja. So I'm not spoiling anything, even for those of you who only read a few of the books. So she does learn compulsion. She has this mild form of compulsion that she learns before going to the White Tower. For those of you who like to track this sort of thing, her strength rating is a 14 on the scale. Mm-hmm. So that's the same as Liana. That's one weaker than Moraine, but she's stronger than, say, I think one stronger than Varin and Alana. So just to put her in perspective. And I think she's the strongest out of the 13 sisters, that group of the 13 sisters who leave the tower. She's the strongest.
She's one of the strongest Aes Sedai around.
She's on the stronger side, yes. Yeah, definitely, I guess, the on that side of the bell curve. She's very weak in healing, which they note. She can only heal like scrapes and bruises, which I think she resents because one of those sisters, and I can't remember which one it is, one of the black, and I'm guessing it's a yellow, mentions that healing is very close to killing with the power. So if you're an experienced healer or strong at healing, you can kill with the power very easily. So interesting little tidbit there. Her first appearance is in the Great Hunt as Jen Red. She's part of the Amalyn's retinue that arrives in Faldara. And like I said, immediately you know she's bad because when you first meet her, there's a scene where she meets with Algamar's sister, Lady Amalisa, and she uses compulsion on her to set her servants to try to spy on Rand and Perrin. Later on, after Fane escapes, when Rand goes down into the dungeon, she's the first one there and she tries to use compulsion on Rand. Right. But he kind of fights it off, and then Moraine walks in and kind of puts an end to the whole thing. So I find it so interesting that it's so obvious that she's bad when you first meet her. There's no there's no mystery to this. When you first meet her, you're like,
but you don't
oh, this
know
girl,
she's
bad.
Black Aja. When you
she
first
uses
meet her.
Compulsion, when she uses compulsion on Amalisa,
yeah. I remember when the first time I read The Great Hunt, you're like, oh, she's probably bad, but maybe just like. Maybe like Aes Sedai are just jerks, and this is just something that they do. Like Moraine doesn't do many sympathetic things in the first book.
Yeah,
right?
You didn't meet any other Aes Sedai, really, have you? Until like the beginning of the Great Hunt. So all you know really is Moraine.
By the end of the Great Hunt, there's no doubts in your mind at all. But like, there is a little bit of like, well, maybe this is just like advanced politicking.
And they're pointing out in the chat that you meet Elida.
Yeah.
Who's also a total,
biznitch. sorry, using harsh letters.
But in this scene, at this scene when they arrive to Faldara, you meet a bunch of the Aes Sedai, and she clearly stands out.
No, she does. I mean, I'm just saying, it's not like the first time you see her, she's like murdering somebody. So it's, you know, that takes a little bit of time. So
she's using mind control. On
she's
somebody,
using mind control.
And but she's also trying to mind control the protagonist of the book.
Like necessarily evil. I don't know.
Okay, but if you don't think that's evil, then we'll get
move on from here.
Yeah. Yes. And I'll remind everyone, our listeners, that we try to keep it to what we think is going to be covered in the show. So originally, I think when we did our character deep dives, we started just doing the first book, but now we've kind of dipped into the second book because we're pretty sure that they're going to be going into at least some of the Great Hunt. So, and she doesn't arrive till then. So we're just going to kind of hit on her character all the way through the Great Hunt. So after she tries to compulse Rand, in Faldara. When Nynaeve and Egwene leave to go to the White Tower, she's part of that group. She's one of the sisters who gives lessons to Egwene and Nynaeve on their way to the White Tower. And we were having this conversation the other day about how, like, most of the sisters who give them lessons are black sisters. So, yeah, her being one of them. She leaves. She actually grills them, too, on the Rand, Matt, and Perrin. So she's clearly interested in Rand, Matt, and Perrin. She's set Amelisa and her maids after them. She's questioning Nynaeve and Egwene about them. She's definitely very interested in that. And so, I guess we should go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
So I think this is the point. This is the point in the book at that point where I go, wait a second. I'm pretty sure I know who this lady is, right? And then later on in the book, her actions kind of seal that deal. But the description that Jen read, I don't believe is the first time that you see her.
Oh, no? Oh, well.
No.
I mean.
I think that, yeah. We talked about this. We talked about the Dark Friend Social a little bit. And I think now it's time to bring it up again. I'm pretty sure she's the Aes Sedai that you see at the Dark Friend Social.
Oh, it definitely is.
Right.
It's confirmed.
Well, yeah. Okay, thanks. And then, so that explains why she's so bulldogish about the three of them. Because that is when all the Dark Friends are given like their marching order. So there you go. That's
yeah. So go. I was just going to tell you. So it's confirmed. So we're talking about the Dark Friend Social at the beginning of the Great Hunt. The man called Boris. Again, spoiler alert. That's Jacob Carradine. So in the Shadow Rising, when they're in Tanchico, Leandrin appears and meets up with Jacob Carradine, and she says, "I saw you there at the Dark Friend Social." Basically. So you know she was there, and you know he was there. I think that's when you find out that he was the man called Boris. I think it is in the Shadow Rising, right? Did we find out earlier?
You find out that he's. Oh, I don't know if you find out when you find out he's Boris.
Yeah, I mean, in you the know, Great Hunt, you know he's bad news.
Yeah,
no, I don't know if you know he's Boris.
I don't know. I think I always knew. I think I just like it was clear to me, but I don't know. I don't know when they. Yeah. I don't. When we get to him, we'll talk about when they. When they directly confirm it, I guess.
Yeah, so that's also in the Great Hunt scene. I hope we see in the first season if they're going into the Great Hunt, because that's such an awesome scene. So continuing on, so like I said, she's one of the sisters who teaches Nynaeve and Egwene on the way to the White Tower. She shortly leaves the group after that, right after Moraine actually leaves the group that's headed to the White Tower. We meet her again later on in the books, the Great Hunt, and she comes to Egwene and Nynaeve, and she tells them that, you know, Rand and Matt and Perrin are in trouble and that they need to go with her because they need their help. And Elaine and Min wind up going with them. She takes them through the ways, travels to Tommen Head, and when they come out, they're encountered by Shaun Chen, High Lady Soroth specifically, who we also know is a Dark Friend, and basically sells them. I don't even know if she sells them. She just gives them to the High Lady Soroth and just heads back out through the ways. So if you didn't think she was bad.
Well, no, at that point.
Now you know she's bad. I guess this is your definitive answer that she's bad. Because she mentions, I think, in that our master or our lord or the dark, our great lord, and you know.
Right. This is where like they put the big flashing red arrow over her.
Yes.
In case you could justify her actions before, she's clearly evil. Yeah, that's this is one of my favorite like bad guy things to be done, because I really didn't know what was happening here. And when it does happen, the first time I read The Great Hunt, I remember just going, "Oh shit!"
It is a scene out of nowhere, though.
Yeah,
it's definitely like it was definitely one of those, you know, didn't see that one coming.
Right, like I mean, you knew like she wasn't taking them anywhere good. You already kind of got that vibe, but like. No, I didn't see that coming at all. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I have a question kind of about this part of the book, but I don't know if I should wait till after we discuss Black Aja, because it's kind of like a Black Aja
adjacent. Go ahead, Jen.
I'll ask it, and then we might have to revisit it later. But on the Wheel Weaves Discord, they were talking about how when she's telling them about in the tower about how they have to go, she doesn't technically lie to them, even though she can. So they were talking about, like, why doesn't she lie? Is she just trying to, like, cover herself by not lying? Like, the thing she says is, like, everything is very vague.
That's a good point, because I would say that she still wants to cover herself because she doesn't expect her cover to get blown. But it wouldn't matter, right? Because if everything went to plan, they would be out of the picture, the four of them. And she, even if she lied to them, there would be no one to say that she lied to us.
I think a couple of things. One, right. I think that Black Aja in the tower have to act as if they're bound by the three oaths all the time. So I do think it's sort of ingrained to them that even when they're lying within the bounds of they're lying in the same way that all the other Aes Sedai lie,
right?
By just not telling you things. So I think it's kind of just practice. And two, she doesn't plan for Elaine and Min to go. Right? She's just trying to get Egwene and Nynaeve. So,
but she says they were going to be taken care of. That's what she actually tells them. And I think she means like taken care of in the nice way. And she, I think, means taken care of like you would have been murdered or something. Like, so
but I think
all four of them would have been out no matter what.
So, yeah, but I think like if she outright lies and they are still around and like somehow that message gets them before the girls leave, then that finds her out. So if she keeps the misdirection up, you know, it covers herself.
So there's a question in Discord, and I think I'm getting this question right. So they're talking about why Leandrin would bring Egwene and Nynaeve to get rid of them. There's a mention of maybe Semiraj was out and she was behind this, but I'm pretty sure, I think it's implied that Ishmael gave these orders, right?
Yes.
Because during that time at the Dark Friend Social, he meets with everybody and speaks and gives them orders. And then literally right after that, her like first act is getting rid of the two girls.
I just assume that he knew that maybe how powerful they were and that they were his friends and they just wanted to get them as far away from him as possible so he didn't have their help, I guess. That's just what I assumed.
So this is what we actually hit upon, what I think happens. So remember, she leaves while they're heading back to the White Tower, pretty much right after Moraine leaves, right?
Yeah.
So I think basically her instructions were to follow Rand and Matt and Perrin, like get whatever information you get. And she like fails at that, right? And has to like continue because her cover is blown. Like she has to continue with that. So I think she leaves to just get new instructions. That's why she leaves suddenly and she comes back. And now the plan is, because the plan is to get Rand to Toman Head, right? He's going there for whatever reason or whatever it is. This is where Balzamon's plans start to really go off the rails for me. I justified like his first book plan, even though I don't know exactly what the end result was. But like after that, man, I don't know what he's trying to do here. Anyway, I think that she gets told, take these girls, give them to a dark friend that you'll meet in Toman Head, who's from this other country, and they're going to be the bait to get Rand to come in case all the other bait that we're using doesn't work.
That's a good point too, that. Right?
Because Dana just said it too in chat, like, if she did send the drag car after Moraine, it could have been just like, let's remove all these Aes Sedai that are with Rand and get him out of the picture.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think they're trying to get rid of some of these people. But yeah, why not just kill Egwene and Nynaeve? I guess, outright killing them in the tower is not a good idea because that draws suspicion. But yeah, she could have taken them into the ways and just kind of left them there if she wanted to kill them. But don't forget, Soroth is a dark friend, and I kind of have the feeling that she's a pretty high-ranking dark friend. So that might also have something to do with it. And I think that's a good idea, another good idea, Tom, that you brought up, is that they're to lure Rand to Falme, because if he knows that, if somehow the word gets out that the Shan should have Egwene and Nynaeve, he would, you know, hightail it over there. And especially when Fane's kind of gone. Because if you think about it this way, right? Originally, I guess the plant Fane was kind of the one to try to lure them there. But Fane kind of starts going off the rails because, right, in the Great Hunt, that's when he's like kind of fighting for control of the group with the Murdral. And their trail keeps going, switching directions. Mm-hmm. And then he finally kills the Murdral and takes over the group and decides he's going to do what the hell he wants to do. So that might be the reason why, because Fane's kind of going off the rails and they need another reason. They need another way to lure them out to Rand to Falme.
Right, right.
It's a lot of different socials going on to get all these instructions.
Yeah, so true. That's a good question, though. Definitely makes you think. I like that. Badger's always coming up with the great questions. So Kate Fleetwood, she's been cast as our Leandrin. So we went through the description of Leandrin, right? She's 34, 5'5". Honey blonde hair with braids, brown eyes. And then we've got Kate Fleetwood, who is 48, blue eyes, brown hair. Doesn't have a rosebud mouth. I'm sorry. I'm going to point this out with every actor or actress that they don't look like the description, but she does have a cold, evil look to her though.
I agree.
Say that much.
I don't know why, but I, I think she looks good, even though, like what you just said, the description is totally off. But something about her face, that resting bitch face, looks like she has it. And,
she does
that. I don't know. I'm sure she's a very nice person. Obviously, I don't know her, and I've never seen her in anything. But something about the way she looks, just, I see it. I don't know. And I don't care what color her hair is. That stuff doesn't bother me for this character. But
something about the way you look tonight.
Yeah. How do you guys picture her braids? Do you picture like big, thick braids or tiny braids?
I always pictured like small braids.
That's what
like
I picture too.
When you go to the Caribbean and get your hair braided. Yeah.
Yes.
Like when Monica gets her hair braided in Friends, that's what I picture.
Yeah, because it's always got to come back to Friends.
It does. I don't think I've ever mentioned Friends once on this podcast, but okay.
Yeah, you have.
Okay. When?
Remember Helena Handbasket?
Fine. That's the only other time.
That's at least once.
I was just going to say,
beaded braids, too.
I saw, yeah, with the, she can click them together.
Well, they say beaded braids, so that's what I always picture. I always picture, like, yeah.
I saw a picture of her that somebody drew online today where they were, like, regular size braids, like three or four braids. And I was like, oh, I never even considered that. I always pictured them tiny.
Like Celtic, maybe? More of a Celtic type?
I don't know. Yeah, I'd always...
Just four pigtails?
Kind of like four pigtails, but braided, kind of like that.
So, yeah, I also picture them short. Not like short, but not as long as Monica's. Yeah.
Oh, boy. I'm looking at that gif in there. But
mesmerizing.
Yeah. But she's not... she's not at all how I pictured Leandrin, of course, but, you know... I'm not going to impugn her until I see her in the role because she does look like an evil Aes Sedai to me. So looking forward to her performance.
She looks like she could like purse up her lips like the way Leandrin is described as doing. Yeah. I don't know. Something.
All right. So let's get into the Black Aja. Let's find out a little bit more about this evil Aja. So for those of you who don't know, which is probably nobody, but so the Black Aja is a secret Aja that
they
operates
don't exist.
Within the White... Yes, that doesn't exist.
Good night, everybody.
They who must not be named. That operates within the White Tower, comprised of Aes Sedai, who have sworn allegiance to the Dark One. So I think we hit on this in our Ishamael episode, that they were formally created during the Trolloc Wars by Ishamael during one of his returns. This doesn't mean, though, that there weren't evil Aes Sedai around before then. This is just because I think going back to the Age of Legends, there's records of Aes Sedai being evil. This is just kind of when they kind of formally incorporated, I guess you can say.
Right.
They filed as an LLC at this time. So in the series, there's reportedly slightly over 200 members of the Black Aja. And this is according to Varen's notes. So that's about, I think there's about 1,200 plus Aes Sedai in the series, like at the time, that are in the White Tower. So that's about a sixth of the White Tower, which is a pretty big number.
I didn't even know there was that many. Right? I thought there were less. I thought there was about 1,000 Aes Sedai. So I thought it was about a fifth.
I think I had it from somewhere. I think it was actually in A New Spring. So, you know, there could be less or more. But it says around 1,200, 1,250 Aes Sedai that exist. And that only like a third of them actually reside in the White Tower, though.
Right.
So there's a lot of Aes Sedai that just live out amongst the people who are traveling or whatnot. So we talked about it earlier. So I'm going to give you the percentages of each Aja that are black. Coming in first place is the Red Aja. There's 48 Red Sisters who are black, and that's 24% of their Aja. If we go to the next highest, we've got 32 in the Gray Aja, which is 22% of their Aja. We've got, 38 in the Green. 38 in the Green Aja, which is 21%. In the gray, there's 32, which is 22%. In the brown, there's 28, which is 21.5%. In the yellow, there's 21, which is about 17.5%. In the blue, there's 22, which is 23%. And in the white, there's 17. And there's four unknown Ajahs that they aren't named in the book of what Ajah those four are. So I guess red is by far the most, because you go from 48 to 38 with the next largest.
Right. They just have...
The percentage isn't that much, because I guess there's a lot of Red Sisters.
Yeah.
So that's the breakdown for anyone who wants to know. So they're in all Ajahs. It seems like the white the least, though, out of any. Yeah. So a little bit about their recruitment and initiation. This was one of the more things I found fascinating. So I'm going to go into a little bit of detail in this section. So girls were watched and selected for recruitment from the day they entered the White Tower. And even full Aes Sedai were watched for suitability. In rare cases, girls came into the White Tower already dark friends, as we mentioned with Leandrin. And testing for the Black Aja involved being kidnapped and brought before the Supreme Council, which is the ruling body of the Black Aja. They were shielded, bound, stripped of clothes, and a knife held to each side of their neck with a mirror so you could see the blood drained if needed. So if they were going to cut your throat, there was a mirror there so you can watch the blood drain out of your throat, out of your neck. Okay. That's pretty hardcore shit. Okay, so then they would ask you if you wanted to join the Black Aja. If you said no, you would be tortured for information and then killed, which I guess is the aforementioned bleeding out. If you said yes, you immediately forswore the oaths on the oath rod, which was very painful. So they had the oath rod with them, and they right away they said, okay, you're breaking these oaths. And then they would swear their new oaths to the Dark One and the Black Aja. And the three oaths that they swore were, I shall obey all commands given by those placed above me in the service to the Great Lord. I shall prepare for the day of the Great Lord's return. And the most famous one, I shall hold close the secrets of the Black Aja until the hour of my death. So those were the three O's that they swore, the three O's.
I have two questions about the part you just said. So I read this online. I'm not sure if it's true, but I read it from the wiki. So it said that...
Well, it's online. It must be true.
Well, there you go. But it said if they kidnapped you and they asked you to join and you said no, then before they killed you, they would wipe your memory of the Black Aja. I don't know if that's true or not. And then I'm thinking, like, is there like an Aes Sedai way to get information out of a corpse? Like, it sounds like a D&D spell or something, but I don't know if that's true or not. It sounded weird to me.
I didn't read that. I think I got this info from the companion, but I'm not sure. I know they would torture you and try to find out as much information that you knew about the Black Aja, because if they had to tie up any loose ends, like if you told somebody else about it, they want to know that so that they can go find that person and kill them.
Maybe that's what it meant. I thought it said like wipe. Maybe it just meant like pull the information out that you had, I guess.
Yes,
maybe that's what
they
it meant.
Did. They would torture you to pull out any information that you had about the Black Aja. Yeah.
And also, so you need the oath rod to forsake your oath from your Aes Sedai oath.
Yep.
Yes.
And then I don't want to say it's easy, but like what happens to you when you forsake those oaths?
It just says it's a very painful process. So I guess you just experience lots of pain when you're doing it. I'm not sure. You're just done with the oaths. They're gone. But like, then they would make them swear these new oaths.
But what's the point of if you could just forsake them? Like,
well, you know, you needed to do it on the oath rod. You needed the oath rod to do that. You can't just forsake the oaths. Like, I can't just say, oh, I'm forsaking the oaths.
So they just oath rod and then like put it back without anybody noticing?
Yeah, yep. So they would bring the oath rod with them. I guess you have to channel into it when they would hold it, and then it would break them of their previous oaths, and then they would swear new oaths.
I don't know. I feel like you shouldn't be able to break the oaths. Doesn't make any sense.
Well, you can only with the oath rod.
And also remember, like, the oath rod actually is, and you find this out in later books, not an oath rod. It's a tool used for people who are like compulsively criminal in their behavior and can't stop by any other means in the Age of Legends. So it's something that's making them be incapable of doing whatever weird, bad thing that they were doing. So they called it a binder. And like, if that's the case, if it's used for some sort of, you know, punishment, then you need to have it be reversible, because it's a possibility that the person didn't actually do whatever it is that they're being punished for. So, yeah.
Yeah, and Badger's making a good point. There's not only one oath rod. I mean, we only know of the one oath rod, but supposedly there are other oath rods. It's not like a one-of-a-kind Tir Angriel.
All right.
Yeah. So remember, too, later on when they're hunting the Black Aja, remember they make the sisters re-swear the oaths on the oath rod to make sure that they're not black? And then don't they add like an extra oath in there?
Yes.
I can't remember. That's too far.
Make them obey the Black Aja.
Yes. But that wasn't the end of it, though. Just swearing the oaths didn't mean you were in. So after that, you were kind of like on a probationary period. So you'd have to continue testing. Basically, the Black Aja would give you various orders to be carried out, basically meaningless stuff, not of really much importance. But they would watch and make sure that you executed those orders well and to determine your advancement. So So just because you swore the oath didn't mean you were really in. You still had some hazing.
Was there anybody that joined just because they didn't want to be killed?
Varen.
I think Varen.
Is that why?
Yeah. I think, I don't remember. I feel like Shiriam, you find out too, right?
She definitely was afraid. I was a fearful person, yeah. But Varen, like, doesn't outright say it, but basically says, like, I was looking into them and I got to a point where, like, I really didn't have any other options but to join them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. She did it for Corp. One out of fear of death and two out of interest.
Right.
Yeah. Can't get any more information unless I am.
Yeah. Right.
And you gotta,
yeah, that's, I think.
You gotta wonder, like, about, you know, thousands of years. You know, the Dark One doesn't come back. Like, what's, you know.
Yeah, who cares?
It's all gold.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it's all, yeah. Right? So, like, you gotta feel like for the people who are just like, well, I'm just doing it to get ahead, you know? Like, I'm not, like, really, like, yay, Dark One, let's go. But, you know, yeah, you know, F the light, whatever. Give me more money. Those guys are like, oh, come on. Now I got to do stuff? Like, for real? You know.
Yeah, yeah. So they were very organized, though. They had a, I guess it's kind of funny how organized they were. But so they were ruled, as I mentioned before, by the Supreme Council, or sometimes called the Great Council, which consisted of 13 black Aes Sedai. 13 is one of the favorite numbers for Jordan and the evil side. They always met hooded, so none of the 13 on the Supreme Council knew who the others were, except for the head. The head of the Black Aja knew who every single black sister was. Mm-hmm. They were the only ones who knew that. Typically, it was the most powerful Aes Sedai in the Black Aja. They were appointed by Shamael. Later on, we get an example where it's not the most powerful sister, but I'm not going to go into that right now. So every member of the council did know the names of some black sisters, enough so that several deaths wouldn't disrupt the structure of the Black Aja. So if you kept it totally secret, then when people died or left, you kind of would lose track of like a whole group of sisters. So, and they would organize into cells that they called hearts, which is a group of three Aes Sedai who know each other's identities and then also know the identity of one other Black Aja in another heart.
Let's Got call that? Them hearts, guys. We'll be the hearts. We're so evil. I love you guys. Heart.
I guess it's good when you're talking like out in public about it. You can say heart and like no one knows what you're talking about. If you say like cell or
she's in my heart.
Right. Yeah. Right.
All right. So you've got hearts, which are groups of threes. Everybody in that heart knows who the other person is. Plus they know one other Black Aja in another heart. So this way, everybody is kind of all linked together and they can communicate. If you just knew the people in your heart, then you really wouldn't be able to communicate through other hearts and communication would be pretty crappy. So they were pretty good communicating structure for an evil organization. So although Ishmael was the founder, some of the other Forsaken do interact and give orders to the Black Aja. As we see later on in the series, we see Masana, we see Mogedion, and I'm trying to think if there are any other Forsaken that we see interact with them. I think those are the two that we see. And you might think that the Black Aja or, you know, Black Sisters would be above normal Dark Friends, non-channeling Dark Friends, but that's actually not true. There are Dark Friends who can stand higher than members of the Black Aja.
Yes.
Yeah. Apparently
they would. Right. It doesn't give you any kind of extra bragging rights in the Dark Friend hierarchy. It's just you happen to have that skill set. That's it.
Yeah, which I thought was weird. I didn't realize that until I was doing research for this, because I always assumed that if you're Black Aja, oh, you're ahead of regular Dark Friends because you can channel, but apparently that's not the case. And apparently there was a lot of contention with that, and there was some tension going on years ago, and there was kind of like a big fight between the non-channeling Dark Friends and the Black Aja. And I guess because the non-channelers just outnumber the Black Aja, that they were able to kind of overwhelm the Black Aja and make sure that the Black Aja didn't, you know, kind of take control of Dark Friends. So there's some food for thought. So goals of the Black Aja. So obviously to undermine the authority of the White Tower. One of their other goals was to disrupt the growth of the Aes Sedai in the White Tower, which explains, I think they mentioned many times in the book that there are not nearly as many Aes Sedai as there used to be. The tower is only half full or a third full. And it's believed that the Black Aja is kind of behind this, ensuring that the Aes Sedai don't go out and recruit as much as they should.
But doesn't that take away from their numbers also?
Well, I think, yeah, that's what I thought. But I think the Black Aja would go out and recruit themselves and then maybe take in channelers who weren't necessarily Aes Sedai. but we don't really meet any of them. Do we meet any, I'm trying to think, do we meet any wise ones or kin or any non-Aes Sedai dark friends who can channel besides like the male channelers?
I don't remember off the top of my head. I'm thinking, yeah, there is somebody in the kin who's a dark friend, but she's not Black Aja. I would say that basically they don't need to have their numbers be increased. The Black Aja doesn't need to be voluminous. They don't have any kind of desire to do so. Their desire, their goal is to undermine the tower, right? That's like their primary mission. So yeah. The more recruits come in, the harder it is for them to do that. Right? The more they have to recruit out of that group to keep their balance of power. So I think it behooves them if they've got somewhere around one fifth of the tower in their grasp, then why try and, you know, get in an extra 100 people and need to recruit 20 of them to keep your numbers up? You know, it's a greater benefit. Sorry, Jen.
I was just thinking like they would get old. I'm thinking like in a normal organization, you would want to keep recruiting young people. But in this case, they're not necessarily aging and dying as quickly. So it doesn't matter as much.
No, they're living longer. If you're a channeler and you're not, you know, you don't take the oaths, then you're going to live longer.
No, but they do take oaths. And I just want to, like, I think that's important, right? They re-swear on the oath rod, I think, not only to bind themselves to the Black Aja, but like if they didn't, everyone would know that they weren't like regular Aes Sedai anymore. So
you're saying because they wouldn't have the ageless face and correct. It would be obvious.
And they would live like twice as long, right? And they don't.
That's a byproduct, I think, like a bonus.
Yes.
I think because you want them to swear the oaths so they, you know, keep the oaths to bind them. But yeah, then I guess that's a bonus too. That's a whole interesting story, right? Because I guess it's easier to recruit the channelers if they come to the White Tower, because we really don't hear much about, you know, a network of dark friends who are channelers but not Aes Sedai. It seems like all of the dark friend channelers are Aes Sedai.
I wonder if there's any wise women dark friend channelers.
And I think someone made a good point, and it might have been Badger in the Discord, that how would they recruit? It's harder to recruit them that way. If they come to the White Tower, it's easy to recruit because you have a sixth of the tower who's there, you know, recruiting. But if it's like a wise one or a seafinder or, you know, a kin, you need somebody in that organization to be able to recruit them. So it makes it a lot more difficult.
But, you know, they have, I mean, you figure there's dark friend recruiters all over the place.
Yeah, there are. That's right. There's dark friend recruiters. That's true.
Right. Like, he doesn't have to be like, you could just be a dark friend and happen to channel like Leandrin happened to be right before she went to the tower. She was already a dark friend. She started the channel, and then it was like a year or something like that before she left. So who knows?
It would have been nice if we got more about that. That's interesting. I never really thought about it till now.
Well, there we go. We found a hole in the book stumps.
Not a hole, just like an area not addressed. It's not. I wouldn't say it's a hole. And their final goal is to create discord and conflict among these existing Aes Sedai, which they do a damn good job of.
Yes.
A hell of a good job. Hell of a good. And we'll see that later on. Can't wait for that part of the show to come out when they get into that.
Yeah, they really do a very, very effective job towards, you know, in the middle of these books.
Well, they have a great patsy to manipulate.
They do. They do.
A really short-sighted, narrow-minded idiot named Elida.
I can't wait till we get to our episode on Elida, by the way, because I feel like there's so much, I guess, recent history. And I say recent, I say the last 15, 20 years or so, that of leadership in the world that they can mine as influence for Elida as Amarin.
Yeah. So there's the Black Aja. Do you guys have any questions? Anything I missed on them? I know there's obviously a lot to talk about them, but I kind of wanted to just leave it at intro and just a little dip into the waters of the books of what we see. We get mention of the Black Aja in the first book, right? Is it one of the dreams of Shamael, right? He talks about the Black Aja. Do we get any other? I mean, I'm trying to remember, even though I just read these freaking books like a couple of months ago, I'm trying to remember, we get the dream. Do any of the sisters mention it in the first book? We only meet like two Aes Sedai in the first book, so. And I don't know if Moraine mentions the Black Aja.
I don't remember that.
Elida certainly doesn't. No. Maybe in the Great Hunt is when they first mention the Black Aja.
I think Tom may mention it. not me, but Tom Maryland.
Oh, well, Rand, right after the dream, yeah. I think Rand tells him about it.
Right. So I think he gets, yeah. That's where you get a little bit more info on from Tom. And he says, don't talk to Aes Sedai about this.
Yeah.
Like,
so you think they'll plant the seeds early on or?
Yes.
Well, if we're getting Leandrin in the first season, so we're getting a black Aes Sedai. Is it going to be, are they going to make it as obvious that she's not, you know, not good? Are they going to try to make it a little more mysterious? Are we going to get more information and exposition on the Black Aja in the first season, you think? Or do you think they push that off and try to keep it more of a mystery?
I think they do. If what I think the episode breakdown is going to be is what it is, I don't think that you're going to get any kind of concrete thing. I think you'll know that she's not nice, but I don't think that you'll know that she's evil until you see her at the Dark Friend Social. I think that'll be like a dun-dun-dun kind of a thing.
You think they're just going to outright show her at the Dark Friend Social?
Yeah, yeah.
You think they're just going to like be like, okay, you're going to see her honey-colored braids and rosebud mouth?
The way I think that they would do it, or the way that I feel that they're going to do it, is that is the Dark Friend Social is the pre-credits scene of Season 2, Episode 1. Because I do think that they're only taking the beginning of the Great Hunt.
Season one or season two?
No, season two, episode one, before the credits roll, I think it's a Dark Friend Social. And then you see her, because I think, again, my theory, and people listen, you know, whatever I said before, is I think that they're taking the beginning of the Great Hunt and they're just putting it in before the end of the Eye of the World. Like basically, the Aes Sedai show up at Faldara before they leave for the Blight.
Yeah, when they first go to Faldara, that's when the Armorland shows up.
Yeah. So,
and that's when they capture Fane and all of that.
Exactly. So I think that you'll know who she is, and then you'll see her as a Dark Friend. Then it'll be like, oh, geez, like, you know, she's right there with them. And then it's a source of tension throughout. But yeah, I don't think that they'll name anyone a Black Aja in the first season.
I don't know what would be better if you didn't know until like the moment they come out of the ways and the Seanchan capture Egwene, or if you knew and then you're just constantly waiting for her to betray them like the entire time in the tower, the entire time through the ways, and then like it finally happens and it involves the Seanchan, which you obviously weren't expecting. But I don't know which one of those would be better for TV.
Yeah, they could do it a lot of different ways, right? I mean, like Tom said, you could do it that way where you meet her in the first season, but then you don't find out she's bad till the second season. You could find out at the Dark Friend Social. You could find out, Jen, where you pointed it out when she leads them into the ways and then gets them captured. There's definitely a lot. They could definitely play a lot with her character and the reveal of her being evil. So, and I think any of those points would be great. I would be on board for any of those.
Yeah, I don't think you should see anybody at the Dark Friend Social, just like the way it is, because once like people start popping up as being Dark Friends, then you're like, anyone could be a Dark Friend. And then you're looking for Dark Friends everywhere, which is why I kind of think he did it like that. So I don't know. I think it might be better to just see like the ring, just see like, you know, the cloak, whatever, the Shinaran uniform or whatever you see of him, just kind of like, and then paranoid of everyone.
I do like the mystery too. I prefer it that way. I prefer it if it was more mysterious.
Okay. I do too. I just don't think that they, I just don't know if they will, right? I do too. I think it works better when you don't know anybody. And I really hope they do it. They do it in a way that, and I talked about this, I think, a few episodes ago, but like, I don't want it to be like, oh, they're in shadow, but people's silhouettes are so clear that you just know who everybody is anyway.
Yeah.
Right? Either you put them so that you can't see who anybody is, or you do it like they did in The Usual Suspects, and you just get a different actor to play them in silhouette so that there's no hint as to who the person actually is. Well, we'll see. And I could be totally wrong, and they could be doing the Dark Friend Social like halfway through the season.
Maybe they do it in the first episode.
The emojis make no sense, but what if that palace was the Dark Friend Social? But it makes no sense with the emojis she posted.
It could be.
The emojis might not mean anything. Maybe she just button mashed emojis. I don't know. Sarah's always playing with us.
Killing us.
Torturing us. You should DM her and ask her, Tom, if that's what it is. And see how she reacts. She might react with an emoji.
We'll see.
All right. That's your homework for this week, Tom.
Okay.
is to DM Sarah and tell her that and see how she reacts. And we'll report back.
All right. I will do so. I'm sure she's going to jump to react to me, but whatever.
Good conversation, guys. Good episode.
Yeah.
So let's wrap it up here. So Yeah. So, reminder everyone to follow us on social media. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can find our links to all of that information in the show notes. Also, a link to our Discord and also a link to Apple Podcasts to review us. I also want to remind you, though, if you don't listen via Apple Podcasts, you can rate or review us in any podcast app or media that you use to listen to your podcast. So go give us a review. That's like the best thing that we love. And that's the best thing you can do for us is to write us a review, a nice review, hopefully. And if you're lazy and you don't want to write a nice review, Tom will write one for you. So just hit him up on Discord and just ask him to write you a review. And then you can copy and paste it.
Guys, if you write us a good review, you'll be in our heart.
Oh, nice, Jen. Well done.
Oh, that's great. That's so sweet. Our black Aja heart.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Where we could slit your throat. Yeah. Anyway, so is there anything I want to check out Tom on Audio Dungeon on Wednesdays at 8:30 Eastern Time on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch? It's a RPG D&D type web series that you can interact with them while they're playing. So go check that out. I'm sure if you've listened to our show, you've heard it 1,000 times and you already know, but go check it out if you haven't checked it out yet. And I know, and I forgot to say this at the beginning of the episode, and I'm sorry. I know last week I said that we were going to have Matt Hatch from the Dusty Wheel on this episode, but we did have to reschedule. So fear not, he will be on next week's episode. We're going to be starting a series, a little history lesson series, starting from the Age of Legends. So Matt's going to join us for the part one, the Age of Legends. We're going to try to work our way up all the way to the beginning of the series. We plan on hitting, you know, the Age of Legends, the War of the Shadow, the Breaking of the Worlds, the Arthur Hawkwing, all that great stuff. So we're going to be doing a multi-part series on that. And, you know, we might, you know, break it up somewhere in between if we get too much history and, you know, too many weeks in a row. We could always throw something in there to break it up. But did I miss anything, guys?
No. Hey, guys, stay safe out there. Right?
Yeah, stay safe out there. Be careful out there. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world at this time, but, you know, just be careful, be safe, and yeah.
Try and treat each other the right way.
Be nice.
Yes, that's all. If you like the books, follow the good guys in the books, and be nice to people.
Be one of the good guys. Don't be one of the Black Aja.
There you go. That's a good closing line.
Don't be Leandrin. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You'll hear us next time.